Totally Football Show. Today, more stormy encounters than Donald Trump's diary and almost as many games with clubs as we round up all the big news. Hey-ho, Silva. Watford's rotating door spins again. Stoke's return to form. Arsenal's return to the top four battle. A massive Sunday night across Europe. Backheels League Cup. And you're in trouble, son. That Borough bottle business. It's all in the Totally Football Show. Okay. Very exciting lineup on today's Totally Football Show. We welcome back Kelly Cates.
Hello, how are you?
I'm really well, Kelly, but not as well as you or your agent, because since you started doing this show, you've literally exploded across.
I think that's what tipped it,
yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah.
I mean, the thing is, people keep saying, oh, you're busy, I've seen you everywhere. And I'm like, one, that's not a compliment. It just sounds like they're fed up of me. And two, how lazy is everybody else? I only do one game a week. I just think it reflects badly on everyone else.
That's true. You're right, Kelly. Also here today, and he is busy, Ian Irving. We've literally dragged you from the transfer window, Ian.
Yeah, kicking and screaming.
You're checking your mobile phone like Ronaldo with a head injury.
It's on. Yes.
Yep. Yeah. Okay, well, you'll give us updates minute by minute.
No. I can comment on things that have happened, but yeah.
Brilliant.
Minute by minute is maybe a little stretch for me, that, yeah.
Okay. Oily Sailor, by night known as Duncan Alexander, is here.
Hello.
Full of opta goodness.
Yeah.
Yeah. Loads of questions, actually. Here's one for you right off the bat, Duncan. Listeners, you can play along at home if you like. Alexis Sanchez, if he signs for Man United, has that happened yet?
Oh, 1 minute. No.
Okay. If he signs, he'll be the 11th player to turn out for both Pep and Mourinho. Can you name the other 10?
Yeah, we probably could. But we've got stuff to talk about.
All right.
Nice.
So much for
the
that.
The answer is yes.
It's quite a dull question, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh,
producer Ben gave me that. Should I just give you the answer straight away? Or
yeah,
do you want to have a go?
Let's rattle through.
Listen, have a go. We'll come
why
back
do you
to
give
it.
The answers at the end?
Yeah,
then if people don't want to listen and use it in the pub tonight, then they can do that.
Okay. Also, hello to you, Ben Yeo, as you run around New Zealand. People have started to write in if they run while listening to the pod. Come on, Ben Yeo.
Go on, lad.
A bit. Yeah. All right, anyway, what do you want to start with today? Should we start, in the absence of any confirmation on Arsenal's swap deal with Man United, Mkhitaryan, Alexis Sanchez and all that, should we start off with how Arsenal played this weekend? It looked to me like they were suddenly enjoying themselves again. It looked the way that Monreal celebrated that opening goal with that punch of the air.
Like a dark cloud had gone.
Kind of,
yeah. Wonder what that could be.
Am I reading too much into that? The way, the gusto with which they attacked that match.
Yeah, I mean, they were playing Crystal Palace, but they did look like a team who the shackles were off and they'd, you know, all the kind of speculation of the last few weeks is, you know, hopefully over, and also possibly looking forward to some new friendly teammates.
Perhaps so. Only 2 wins in 9 matches before this for Arsenal, whereas Palace had only had 1 defeat in 11, I think. Or was it 12? But you're right. I mean, the Palace maybe facilitated this Arsenal success, but it was tremendous success. But it was the fact that it was only a league game against Palace. It was right at the start of the game. It just seems significant to me, the amount of emphasis that Arsenal were putting into their kind of have some of that fist bumps and stuff.
Yeah, they looked happy. I think the thing that I took out of this game is I've got a theory that, obviously as a Wickham fan, I don't get to experience it very often, but when your team scores a lot of goals in the first half, everyone at half time goes, oh, this could end 9 or 10. But it never really happens. And I had a look, actually, and 75 times in Premier League history that a team scored 4 or more in the first half, they've only averaged 0.89 goals in the second half. So, you know, and 34 times of those, they just haven't scored in the second half. So the rule of thumb is, if your team does well in the first half, go home.
Absolutely. Of course, there were some big scoring games across Europe in which both halves saw significant action. On score sheets. A word or two about Mesut Ozil, who particularly seemed to run the show in the absence of Alexis.
Yeah, I think as well, yes, I'm sure it is a reason Sanchez leaving why Arsenal looked so good initially, but I just think that's human nature, isn't it? I think we've all had this transfer hanging over our heads. The Arsenal players, it feels to me from the outside like they've had this transfer hanging over their heads for a lot longer than just the last couple of weeks. Longer than the last 6 months, probably the last 12 months, really. So if there was a release after that, then I can, from a human perspective, I can understand that. And also it's a chance for players to stand up and be counted as well a little bit. And I think there is an element of that, not least because potentially there are more than just Henrik Mkhitaryan arriving at Arsenal as well. So, you know, the players need to do that. You mentioned Ozil as well. I mean, he does do this. This isn't new for Arsenal, is it? You know, playing this sort of way at home this season. Either their home record has been very good, they've scored lots of goals as well, and Ozil does have an ability to stamp his authority on this sort of match and his character on this sort of match and help produce the sort of goals like Lacazette scored, which of course was all the things you'd say, vintage Arsenal, but it was an absolutely beautiful goal.
Yeah, featuring Ozil's participation no less than six times, numbers indicate. All right, and is Aubameyang going to come? What do you think, Ian?
I think there's a good chance of it. I'm not particularly well connected at Arsenal, but in terms of the things I've heard around and people who are a lot better connected than me, it does sound like that there is scope to do this deal, because not least Dortmund seem quite keen to get rid of him. So when that happens and the other team wants to bring him in and the money is right, then it does tend to happen. I'm really, really interested, though, to see how Henrik Mkhitaryan gets on at Arsenal.
Right.
Really interested.
Are you curious about whether he and Ozil can coexist within the same tactical setup? Is it that kind of interest?
I'm just interested considering how it's gone at Manchester United, really. Because there's been so many different theories about why it's not worked out, from, you know, from off the field stuff, on the field stuff, his relationship with the manager, his adaptation, the type of character he is. So many different theories. And it'd just be intriguing to me to see him in an environment which seems like it's going to suit him better than Old Trafford, a manager that seems like he's going to suit him better than Jose Mourinho as well, right. Just to see how good he can be.
He wouldn't be the first attacking midfield flair player to leave the services of Jose Mourinho and go on and be absolutely brilliant somewhere else. And actually, another example, like Memphis Depay, we'll talk a bit more about him later on. Interesting. Arsenal have Chelsea coming up.
They do.
Kelly, and you went down to Brighton to see Chelsea this weekend.
I did go down, and I'll be at Arsenal's match against Chelsea in the Carabao Cup later this week as well.
Yeah.
Yes, I will. I saw Chelsea beat Brighton. And they did look. They scored a couple of goals early on, much in the same way that Arsenal did against Crystal Palace. They got an early start. They did really well. And they did it without Morata and Pedro, who were suspended. And that front three worked really very nicely. Willian, Batshuayi and Hazard all linked up really well. And it was almost as though they were sort of looking at Michy Batshuayi going, do you know, you've had a lot of stick recently. You're not really doing too well with it. Let's keep getting you involved. There was always that extra little pass to him. And it was they were good to watch. They were Brighton were unlucky. They could have got something out of this game if certain things had gone their way. They were just a bit off. But sometimes that just comes down to the fact that Chelsea have got better players than them. So that was the kind of the summation of it. But they look good, Chelsea, without looking absolutely phenomenal, because it's hard to judge when the opposition isn't great. Much in the same way when you look at Arsenal against Palace, you just kind of have to qualify it slightly. But yeah, if they play like that against Arsenal, you should have a good game on Wednesday.
Well, you should. Yeah, there have been some good games between them.
The last one wasn't.
The last one. The 2-2 before that, right?
Yeah. You can only beat the first leg of the League Cup semi-final was not great.
Batshuayi, though, his participation, and I'm borrowing other people's tactical ideas here, but his participation allowed the likes of Hazard and Willian to play in a different way than if it had been, say, Morata up front. Is that right?
Yeah, and there was a lot more interplay
and
between the three, and look, trickery and backheelery and all kicks and flicks. I mean, poor Lewis Duncan, Shane Duffy had a terrible. Lewis Duncan, in particular, I think he spent half the game on his bottom in the penalty area. But it was not because he was doing anything particularly wrong, just because Hazard was just on it. And when he's on it, and Thierry Henry made a really interesting point about him that he came off.
Was he your guest?
Yes, and he came off after, I don't know, 58 minutes in the game against Leicester. Mm. And he said he was really impressed with the way that Antonio Conte has dealt with Eden Hazard. He said that when was sort of contrasting it with the way that Arsene Wenger deals with players at Arsenal, and there's no accountability there and the kind of old tropes that we trot out about Arsenal. But he was saying that with Antonio Conte and Eden Hazard, 50-odd minutes against Leicester at 0-0, you need a goal. Eden Hazard's supposed to be your star man, the man that is going to create anything. And he took him off. And what he was saying was, you've not performed well for a couple of games. I've given you nearly an hour of this one, you've still not performed well, you're off. And if you don't play well, you come off, and I don't care who you are, which is a message not just to Hazard but to the rest of the players. And that Hazard then lifted the game. He talked about it happening last season against it was the game before Arsenal. Did he take him off against Liverpool and then they played Arsenal, I think?
Possibly.
That was the example he gave. I can't remember exactly. But he gave that example as well and said he's just not bothered about upsetting people, and that in that circumstance with Hazard, he knows exactly when to judge, when to give him a little kick.
Yeah, he's giving them all a kick by threatening them with Peter Crouch, Ashley Barnes, any
well,
of these
options. Well, they'll be quaking.
Because it looks like Edin Dzeko. I mean, this does look like a serious thing. And that makes sense, doesn't it?
Yeah,
bringing
I mean,
Edin Dzeko.
A lot of clubs use Ashley Barnes as a stalking horse. So
do they?
We've seen this before many times. I hope they do sign Ashley Barnes, really, because that would just be probably the oddest signing ever in Premier League history. Maybe Andy Booth going to Tottenham all those years ago would match it. Barnes has scored half as many Premier League goals as John Barnes, so which I always find.
How many games has he played compared to John?
Fewer. And
fewer.
Obviously, yeah.
Yeah, literally.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'd like to think that this could rejuvenate one of the most unremarkable international careers has ever been with Ashley Barnes. He made his debut for the Austrian under-20s a decade ago and hasn't been near any Austrian setup since. His maternal grandmother, I think I'm right in saying, is Austrian. He went on a pre-season tour about a decade ago with Plymouth to Austria, was spotted by one of the Austrian national team youth coaches, subsequently called up for the Austrian under-20 team for a little tournament, came on as a sub quite late in one match, and then hasn't been near Austria again, basically. And
wow.
I asked him about it quite recently. Every time I interview Ashley, I tend to bring it up just as a lighter side, shall we say. And the response is always the same. Don't know what happened to that, really. So maybe if he did go to Stamford Bridge, it could rejuvenate that international career.
That's a fascinating little parenthesis, Ian.
Thank you.
Anyway, so as I say, Edin Dzeko, who very much is an international with Bosnia-Herzegovina, apparently they've made a $44 million offer to Roma for him. He's 32, but Roma would throw in a left-back Emerson Palmieri, although you'd think they were maybe covered in that position. But anyway, that could make sense for Roma as well, I think.
I like Edin Dzeko. In some ways, he's been a forgotten figure in Manchester City's not-so-distant past because he did score a number of important goals, not least in, of course, that...
Yeah,
in that incredible comeback on the final day of the season that's obviously gone down in folklore and rightly so as well because it was incredible. But yeah, Edin Dzeko's goal was equally as important as Aguero's and Pablo Zabaleta's, really.
He's actually got one of the best minutes per goal rates of any player in Premier League history, which is, you can read two ways, because obviously he was better than I think people remember. And also he came off the bench a lot. There's a lot of players who are kind of tagged with being super subs who aren't actually that good. Andy Carroll, for instance, has hardly scored any goals as a sub. But Dzeko really has. So if you are going to sign a sort of older, bigger man, he probably is the other way to go. So.
If it is just about numbers, though, Michy Batshuayi's had great numbers, hasn't he? I mean, it feels to me like when he plays, he scores, and then people tend to critique the rest of his game and point to as a reason why.
He's at 8 in 23, but limited time in most of those appearances.
Yeah,
he scored a title-winning goal before ever starting a game for his club, which is good going.
Yeah, last year at West Brom, wasn't it? Yeah, he scored the goal that won them the title.
Tom says, I'm looking for a useless stat. How many back heels have successfully been played in one Premier League game? I'm guessing that Chelsea's match away at Brighton came close.
Well, sadly, this isn't something we collect, which is an aberration, really. Because
watching it, Kelly, did it seem particularly heely thing?
Were they all wearing heelys? Is that what you're asking? Were they skidding around the pitch? Yeah, it was. There was a lot of trickery. There were lots of, especially from Hazard, there were lots of moments where you kind of looked at him and thought, oh, he's showing the full box here today.
I love a back heel myself.
I think the back heel is particularly unpopular in England.
Oh, really?
I think you go other countries and people just, it's seen as a valid pass. But in England, you know, a back heel doesn't come off. People are you know, furious and think it's a, you know.
Because Ozil did a pretty special one as well, didn't he? I thought everyone was quite happy with him for that.
Yeah, they're happy. Obviously, they're happy when it works out. But, a token back heel in the middle of the pitch.
It's not a Rabona, though, is it? I mean, that is silly.
Yeah. And knee damaging, possibly.
Very possibly, yeah.
I'll tell you what I do love.
Oh, wait.
Long, not the pass, the long sort of cross-pitch pass.
Yeah.
But when a player kills it, absolutely stone dead, that's my favourite thing. Okay. Definitely.
There was an ooh at Burnley, actually, at the weekend. Not exactly the same, but a long clearance, I think, from one of the Manchester United defenders was killed in an instant by Nkudu making his home debut. Absolutely killed it with a beautiful, beautiful, perfect, just cushion of a touch, and then sent Burnley immediately on the attack once again as they were chasing a late goal. And it just stuck with me, the ooh that Turf Moor made, because that's not a noise they often make, really, at Turf Moor, to be honest.
What noise do they make at Turf Moor?
Those are noises, yeah. I like it. I love Turf Moor. Anywhere for me that's still got wooden seats, I love that. the noise they make as well. I think that's underestimated when teams go on the attack. It's
the seats.
It's markedly different to the noise of plastic seats. And actually, one of the things I do love,
as everyone stands up, they clack.
Exactly. Yeah. And that is one noise. You're just talking about things you like in football. Mm-hmm. The noise of seats banging as people stand on their feet to watch an attack. I love that.
Duncan.
Yeah, that is a good noise. Actually.
All right.
Yeah.
No, I just wonder if you, because we're going even more, ever more niche.
Yeah, I think if we go back on the pitch, I think
is there a particular kind of number that you enjoy?
48.
There you go.
Yeah, it's classic. talking about football, I quite enjoy when a player towards the end of the game is trying to waste time and he's in the corner and there's three opponents trying to get the ball and they can't. And if it, particularly if he can play it off the corner flag at some point. Just aesthetically lovely.
Did you really enjoy Man City, Man United? Is that what you were going to say, Ian?
No, I was going to say when players do that and then they kick it off one of the defenders and win a throw-in.
Yeah. Absolutely love that. Exactly what City were doing to Man United.
Yeah, he did it like three times in a row. It's just beautiful.
Wow. Yeah, I must admit, I did enjoy that too. Of course, back heel-wise, there was only one back heel really this weekend in Europe, and that was Leon Bailey's. Did you see this?
No.
From fully 12 yards out to score for Leverkusen against Hoffenheim, moving themselves into second place in the ever-so-tight Bundesliga. I say ever-so-tight. There are actually six teams within 1 point. Leverkusen, Schalke, Leipzig, Gladbach, Dortmund and Frankfurt, but not contained within that six teams, 1 point paradigm, are the leaders, Bayern Munich, who are 16 points clear anyway. Leon Bailey, who's probably the player of the season, actually. And is that right? Might be. Anyway, we'll get Honigstein in and ask him. But he's been amazing. Right, well, we better take a quick break because we wandered significantly off the narrative path. We'll be back on it after this.
Listeners, our partnership with Paddy Power helps to keep this podcast free. And speaking of free, when you join Paddy's Rewards Club, every time you place five bets of £10 or more on any sport in a single week, Paddy will give you a free £10 bet the following week. Sign up now at paddypower.com. T's and C's apply. Max £10 bonus per person per week. Specific odds required. Exclude shops and cashed out bets. 18 plus only. BeGambleAware.org. And when the fun stops, stop.
Okay, so 11 players have featured for both Pep and Mourinho. Well, if Sanchez does sign. Who are they?
Samuel Eto'o.
That's one.
Ibrahimovic.
Also.
Idrissa Johnson.
Correct.
Who else?
KDB. There you go.
Claudio Pizarro. Is
that
one?
That's true. That is one.
That's a good one.
Arjen Robben. Yep. Mm. Yep. Pedro, you could have had him. Fabregas, Xavi Alonso. Zlatan, we said, just missing one. We'll come back to that later on. Another attempt to make
You're
that sound exciting.
Attention, aren't you?
Yeah. Anyway, Kelly, as you say, Arsenal playing Chelsea in the semi-final, second leg, Carabao Cup. The other semi-final, of course, will see Bristol City taking on Manchester City. How are Bristol City doing at the moment? Not well. They drew 0-0 with Derby this week, having been beaten 1-0 by Norwich the week before. In 2018... they've conceded 11 goals and only scored one. Curiously, though, Kelly, who was that goal against?
Manchester City.
Bang. Manchester City are in form, aren't they? They beat Newcastle 3-1.
I mean, they did beat Newcastle 3-1, but they should beat Newcastle 3-1.
82% possession as well. 82%
possession.
Maybe win the game when you're that far on
Not
top.
Not always.
Not always, no.
And it was only 1-0 in the reverse fixture, which is possibly one of the dullest games I've seen. It was
really?
Just, oh my God. I do have an issue with a team not trying to score a goal until the last, 5-10 minutes, which is what happened.
Newcastle's maybe a bad example for this particular argument on my part, but having watched Southampton and West Ham just before Christmas do pretty much that against Manchester City at the Etihad Stadium, and hear everyone say, oh, well, they should have had a go. And it was like, well, actually, they came pretty close to taking a draw from the Etihad, which only Everton had done and still have done to that point. And also they came, I think it was West Ham, certainly came very close to actually getting more out of that game. And the whole tactic was trying to stop Manchester City, be smart in your opportunities.
Right.
Set pieces as well was a key thing on that particular day. And I've got no problem with teams trying to stop Manchester City. They're that good, aren't they?
Teams, if you're facing Manchester City, do what you want. Ian has no problem with it.
Absolutely.
You have carte blanche. Here's some things. Ask Oily Sailor, says Adam. Has any other Premier League team gone longer in the Premier League than Newcastle in A, getting a penalty, and B, an opponent being sent off, and C, who has hit the woodwork more than Newcastle United this season? It sounds to me like Adam is feeling a little bit bitter about
Sounds like he's constructing some sort of excuse factory somewhere. But I had a look because I'm nothing if not thorough. He's a bit off the mark with the woodwork because quite a lot of teams have. Newcastle have done it 7 times this
year. Who's done it the most?
Man City, obviously, which, you know, 16. But second place, joint second place, Southampton, who don't really score very many. So, you know, FIFA, make the goals a bit bigger for Southampton and they'd be all right. The other two things, he's sort of on to something, I suppose. The Newcastle have gone 24 games without a penalty. Only Burnley are currently on a longer run with 29. And no Premier League opponent of Newcastle has been sent off for 115 games, which is the longest current run in the Premier League.
So, having said that, if you don't get out of your own half, you're less likely to...
If you've got 18% possession, then you're not, you know...
going to get fouled as much. Here's something else from the world of stats. Opta Joe, which Opta are you, Duncan? Do you have an Opta nomenclature?
I sometimes help with Opta Joe.
It's a collective thing. It's a
secret cabal of... Yeah, right. Exactly.
Okay, well, one of you, anyway, tweeted on Saturday, provocatively, 22 years ago today, Man United were 12 points behind the league leaders, having played 23 games. Exactly the same situation as this weekend, and of course they went on to win it in the end, because you like to put a little word with a question mark. In this case, it was repeat question mark. Nonsense.
Well, is Pep Guardiola a better manager than Kevin Keegan? That's the question. The big
question. We're all
question.
Waiting time for the answer tell. To that one.
Quick final point on that game.
Okay, yeah.
Obviously, Aguero loves playing against Newcastle.
Yeah.
Perfect hat-trick, which is good. First perfect hat-trick since he scored one himself.
Against Newcastle?
Yeah.
But it's just funny because the last one was against Newcastle as well.
Yeah, yeah. Can you name...
In fact, he's got 14 goals in 12 league games against Newcastle.
Well, if you include the two assists as well.
Right.
1.4% of the goals Newcastle have ever conceded in the Premier League have been scored or assisted by Aguero.
That's amazing.
I like that one.
Wow. When you stumble across stuff like that, does that make everything else worthwhile? All the wormholes that you go down to know kind of great statistical conclusion?
Essentially, yeah. I think the peak of that was obviously Cambridge scored 7 two seasons ago against Morecambe. Uh-huh. And I looked up the last time Cambridge had scored 7 in a league game, and then I had to, you know, have a look at what happened that day. And Ernie Wise died that day. So Morecambe... And why?
That's bittersweet, isn't it, really?
I was sad remembering it, but also very happy.
Right. It's what he would have wanted, you feel.
Yeah.
Yeah. Have you got a favourite stat, Ian?
I can't match that, unfortunately.
No, okay.
No.
Kelly?
I'm just sad now.
All right. Let's change things up and talk about Watford after this.
Tweet us at The Totally Football Show and find us on Facebook, also at The Totally Football Show.
Watford, boy, they're efficient, aren't they? Mm. Some clubs dither around for months trying to find a replacement. Watford, get the man out, get the man in, all in the space of a day.
They've done very well, the Potsos,
to
be this organised.
They've done it before,
haven't they? They are practised at this. Mm. They do seem to be owners who have a plan, and whether or not you agree with what their plan is, they execute it well. The club
seems
agree?
To be... Do you agree with it, Kelly?
I think it works for them.
Yeah.
Oh, do you mean I agree with them sacking Silva?
Yeah.
I think if you go into Watford, this is what you expect. If you go into, and I know they gave him a longer contract than most Watford managers have had before, but I think if you go into Watford, you know that you are going to be judged on short-term results. And if after 9 games you say, I'm going to go off to Everton, can I go and have a chat with them? Because I quite fancy moving on from here. I think, one, it's reasonable to ask because you know your time at Watford is going to be quite short. Two, it's then also reasonable for the club to say, no, we're 9 games into the season, you stay here and you put a bit of effort in before we let you go and
until
move
we
on.
To,
yeah, exactly. Yeah. Which I think is about 9 games in, that's reasonable. And I think then if results for a few months fall off a cliff, and performances, more importantly, fall off a cliff, if the players look like they're not responding to you and you've then had time to put someone else in place to take over immediately, it seems entirely reasonable from the way that the club is set up. It's not the same for every club, but for Watford, it seems like a very sensible decision.
Well, it would be fascinating to hear what Watford fans made of it. Who was doing 606?
that'll be me.
Was that you?
Yeah, and Wrighty. So, yeah.
They
were fine with it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they were absolutely fine with sacking Marco Silva.
Because they're tense.
Yeah, but they're used to it. They've had, what, 10 managers since 2012.
But they're four points above the relegation zone. That's the key,
basically, the relegation zone starts at sort of ninth.
Yeah.
Oh.
And also, they've seen the performances drop off since he, you know, flirted with Everton. So they're fairly pragmatic about it. They know how their clubs run. They know that that's how it works at Watford. They've seen 10 managers since 2012, and they know that by and large, they've been decent appointments. So they're kind of fine with it. They trust the owners to make the right decision for the club, because that's kind of that's what their track record suggests that they're going to do.
It's become a short-term club, hasn't it, basically, in the way that they think, in the way that they act.
And that's why you can understand why Marco Silva said, can I go and speak to Everton?
And it's equally why you can understand why he's out of a job at this point as well, I suppose.
Do you think he'll stay? There's a lot of people saying, oh, I bet he's with Southampton by the end of the month.
It'll be interesting to see what happens next, because I remember when those links were really strong with Everton and they were trying so hard to bring him in as well. Mm. His reputation was really high, wasn't it? He'd nearly kept Hull up last year, which seemed like an impossible job. And also, of course, he'd made a really great start with Watford. But I remember thinking at the time, well, yes, he did great things with Hull and he nearly kept them up, but he didn't keep them up. And with Watford as well, yes, he had a fantastic start to the season, but it was just a start to the season. So, and he's had a great track record where he's been previous, of course, as well. And the jobs that he's done in Greece and Portugal is revered there, and rightly so by the look of his track record. But in terms of English football now, it will be interesting to see how this experience with Watford and certainly the way he looked at that Everton job so quickly as well, what effect that has on the opinion of him in boardrooms across the country.
Indeed. The man taking his place, Duncan, as you no doubt know, is Javi Gracia, who has done lots of things. Most recently at Rubin Kazan, had a couple of top half finishes with Malaga, beat Barcelona when they were very, very good in their treble-winning campaign. Good positional discipline, I read. His team's very hard to break down. They are essentially well-organised.
Yeah, which is sort of the issue Watford fans have had with Mazzarri last season. Mm. So, you know, I think they enjoyed the fact Silva's been a bit more open, playing better football. So it'd be interesting to see how that works out, really. I mean, I'm just sad that they've broken the perfect run of managers. So Watford seasons in the Premier League, 38 games for Graham Taylor, 38 for Eddie Boothroyd, 38 for Flores, 38 for Mazzarri, 24 for Silva.
Wow. Could they not have hung on for
14 more games? Come on. Wow.
They were better off at this stage under Mazzarri than they are under Marco Silva. 4 points.
4 points.
But I think this goes down to the argument at the moment. Basically, the bottom, 12, 13 teams are so equal that you could all go down, you could all finish 10th, any of you. And it's whether, I think a lot of fans now are like, well, we're not going to finish in the top six. So, you know, why don't we just play entertaining football? At least if we're going to go down or struggle, why not entertain us?
Mm. Inside the Far Post says, if it were possible to clone Sam Allardyce, how many Premier League clubs would he be managing right now, Duncan?
Six.
Do you think six, or are you just being...
I think that you could only clone a maximum of six Sam Allardyce.
Is that right?
Isn't it? Yeah, the
is
machine
it a bit like
would...
when you used to do tape to tape and that each generation?
Yeah.
Or like that Michael Keaton film, Multiplicity.
Exactly, yeah.
Folding a piece of paper.
The DNA would
fade. Folding a piece of paper.
Which you can only do...
seven times.
Yes.
Or putting cream crackers in your mouth. You can't eat more than seven. We'll do that. But if you were to clone Sam Allardyce, that's the thing. Each generation would be a little bit more wonky than the last.
You could argue...
you end up with, I don't know, Gary Megson or something like that.
You could argue that is sort of happening to Allardyce at the moment. You know, his start at Everton's been fairly negative. You know, they failed to score and have a shot on target in three games already, which is...
Right.
You know, a lot compared to his previous club. So
they did manage a shot in this
game
this weekend.
This weekend, so they went mad. But generally, his kind of methods, I think, you know, are kind of reaching their limit.
We'll touch on Everton and their match against West Brom in a second or two. But Andrew has a question. He says, as another Premier League job opens up briefly, when exactly is a visionary club going to climb back on the Kerbs train? Alan Kerbishley.
Mr. 12 to 1.
Was he quoted this weekend again?
I don't think he's going to take a job, is he? I don't think it's whether or not they approach him. It's that I think he was interested for a while, and then he has a nice life. He does some television stuff. He has a, you know, life outside of football, which, you know, hard to imagine, but he does. And I can't, I mean, unless it was the perfect job, I can't see anything sort of tempting him back in. So that way around, I don't think it would work.
I
assume that that question is asked sort of tongue in cheek as well, because he's been out of the game for such a long time.
He has been. Because his last job was West Ham and he sued them for constructive dismissal. I always wondered if that put some kind of mark against him in clubs' heads, that he was a troublemaker, litigious, that kind of thing. Anyway, Javi Gracia is the man now in the hot seat, hopefully for at least 38 games with the Hornets. His first game will be against Stoke, who successfully unveiled their new manager this weekend in a 2-0 victory over Huddersfield. Ian, you're nodding and smiling.
Yeah, not for any particular reason other than saying that they needed to go back to basics and Lambert could do that for them. But I'd not be foolish enough to say that what I said last week was at all, you know, or what happened this week is at all making me right, because there's still a long way to go for Lambert.
What did you say last week?
I just was defending him when everyone else in the room
Lambert.
Was... Yeah, when everyone else in the room was sort of groaning at his appointment. But it's early days, it's only one game. I did see encouraging signs for Stoke, though, in that performance. And it just seems like a nice fit, that, really, Paul Lambert at Stoke, in terms of the way the club is, the way the fans are, the type of players who are in that squad as well. And he seemed to get a bit more out of Shaqiri as well, and he's such a talented footballer that if he is playing well in that Stoke side, then you don't, you know, in my opinion, I give them a real chance of getting out of trouble if he can sparkle.
Boom. Everton then, 1-1 with West Brom. Horrible injury for James McCarthy. Leg broken in two places. He's only just come back, of course, from some hamstring bother, and that's him out for a long time, I imagine. Yeah, all very unpleasant.
Lovely to see Seamus Coleman actually leaving his seat in the director's box and going down to speak to James. I know the friends anyway, as teammates and clubmates at international level as well, but that just underlines to me what a lovely man Seamus Coleman actually is. He's one of the nicest people in football that I've met, certainly. You know, obviously he's been through exactly the same as the road that James is starting on now as well. And to see that such obvious support, so immediate support for him as well, I thought was really nice, a touching moment, that.
Tell us about Everton then. They had a shot on target. It took 38 minutes. They had three more afterwards. How did Theo Walcott do? Duncan.
Did pretty well. He got his first assist in the Premier League in 28 games.
Got booked as well, didn't he?
He did get booked. Fiery.
He also sported a new and quite raffish hairdo.
Looked quite good. Also, I thought him in a shirt other than Arsenal was really unsettling. Often you see a player move clubs and it seems, you know, it's a footballer in a different shirt, but seeing Theo Walcott in an Everton shirt was genuinely odd.
Seeing Tony Pulis at West Brom for me was deeply disturbing. I couldn't divorce him from the Stoke reality. It was so welded into my psyche. Everton now have an 11-day break until they kick off next against Leicester. That's exciting.
The most worrying thing.
Will they be off to Dubai?
I'm sure they'll have some warm weather training or some description.
Ian, what's the most worrying thing for you?
Yeah, sorry.
You're right.
Holidays in Dubai are lovely, I'm sure. Indeed, for footballers in the middle of hectic seasons. But what worried me about the comments after the weekend from Sam Allardyce was this remark that Rooney and Sigurdsson can't play together. Now, for the return of the former wonder kid Wayne Rooney and the club's record signing, both players who were brought in last summer to now be unable to play together, according to the manager, I think for me is a real concern for Everton.
Do you think he may have a point?
He's better placed than me to judge it. So if he believes that, then fair enough. He thinks that the two of them don't have enough pace to be able to play together. Everton struggled, didn't they, at the start of the year, certainly with the number of number 10s they seem to have, and trying to fit them all into the puzzle. It seemed like they'd sort of... He'd cracked it, Allardyce, using Rooney in a certain role and using Sigurdsson in a certain role, but now the options of Tosin and Walcott are there, then perhaps he doesn't believe he can fit Rooney and Sigurdsson in, which I think is a real concern, because Sigurdsson is an excellent footballer, is a decisive footballer as well in terms of goals and assists and his set pieces as well. And I think as well, Wayne Rooney's shown this season that he can still produce match-winning moments and he can still contribute in a way that he used to. Perhaps not the same dynamism and the same sort of physical attributes, but certainly in terms of his passing ability and his scoring ability as well, that there's still a lot to give Everton Football Club from Rooney.
I'm concerned too.
Yeah, you look concerned, James.
I am.
Yeah.
I am. You know, Theo went up there to play with his buddy Wayne.
Yeah, but they've spent a lot of money on Sigurdsson, and they've spent a lot of money in terms of wages bringing Wayne Rooney in.
Yeah.
So in terms of an outlay, in terms of transfer fee and
I can't help but agree with you.
And wages, you know.
Yeah. There wasn't an expectation that Wayne Rooney was going to play every game when he came into Everton. It was always going to be managed. It was always going to be here and there. And
that's definitely a fair
for when
point.
He was when he was available.
But you wouldn't.
But Sigurdsson is more of a worry.
Well, you wouldn't expect them to rotate, would you? You know.
Yeah, exactly. Mm.
Yeah. So Kelly's concerned now as well. Duncan, how do you feel about this current situation?
I think if you look at what Sigurdsson did last season, which is why clubs were willing to pay that amount of money, he was a kind of set-piece specialist for Swansea. And I think that will appeal to Sam Allardyce. And I think it was quite telling that he said, I need to give Sigurdsson a chance centrally and put Wayne on the bench. So I think, you know, Allardyce has kind of put his cards on the table. But I thought the week before, when they lost to Spurs, he was pretty scathing about all of his players as well, which is pretty early to come out like that. So
he was again at the weekend. He was again after West Brom. He was sort of saying we didn't play to our strengths and the players didn't really. He was upset with the way that they performed, and he's not holding back at all, is he?
No, it's very early, as I said, to do that. So whether, you know, what's going on behind the scenes, who knows?
Listeners, do you like shaving and looking smooth and clean?
Yes!
But do you enjoy having to go to the shops for new razors and other shaving supplies?
No!
Well, Cornerstone gives you everything you need for a great shave, and they'll deliver it all right to your door. Cornerstone's super sharp, award-winning blades are engineered in Germany, which is always a good sign, and their range of balms, creams and exfoliators are all environmentally friendly, alcohol-free and suitable for the most sensitive skin. Get £10 off your first order and check out the range for yourself at cornerstone.co.uk/totally and find out why tens of thousands of men have switched over to Cornerstone.
Quick word about the Football League, where there's been all sorts of excitement this weekend. Nottingham Forest, now under the management of Aitor Karanka, beating Wolves 2-0. That's Wolves' first league defeat in 13. Also, you had Fulham beating Burton 6-0. There was one of the most amazing games of the season, that Leeds defeat at home to Millwall, who I don't think had. I can't remember the details. Do you know the details on this?
I know some of the details, but the fact is, even I was watching that game come through on Soccer Saturday because I'd been driving back. I'd listened to a bit on the radio, and I came in, and I couldn't work out as they were, because they hadn't updated the score as I was watching it, and I kept, and they were saying Leeds. Matt Murray was doing it. It's like Leeds are in the, no, Millwall are in the lead. No, God, and I got so confused because it just swung backwards and forwards. But Leeds 2-0 down at 10 men, and then to be able to come back into it. But then obviously Millwall sort of won the game in the end. But just an extraordinary game at Elland Road.
They'll be talking more about that on the Totally Football League show on Tuesday. And hopefully also the Borough water bottle incident with QPR. Have you heard about this?
Yes. It's awful.
It really is awful.
It really is awful.
One question which I haven't seen answered yet. Does the borough keeper drink?
But nobody said that he has, so I'm assuming that he didn't drink the water.
Or maybe they just don't
but
like to
also,
mention it.
What goes through your mind? You're sitting there and you see the water bottle and you think, I'm going to tell you what we'll do. Let's get his water bottle. Ha, ha, ha. Quite funny. Not, you know,
supposedly
great,
there was a pitch invader who collected the water bottle, and that's how it ended up in the stands. And they decided to add a little extra and then throw it back out for him.
Yeah.
Anyway, the police...
you can get those little kind of sachets of squash that you can put into drinks now, but frankly, if you can carry your own with you, why not?
Well, there are people... Wasn't it Julie Christie who advocated the drinking of urine?
Not other people's. I think it's about drinking your own. Benefits are supposed to be about drinking your own urine.
Okay.
Exactly that. I'm not advocating it. Just to be clear, I'm not advocating it.
Why is your own urine okay, but other people's urine not?
I suppose because it has your own antibodies. I don't know. I'm not an expert. I feel like I'm being the go-to person on this.
Anyway.
And I don't know.
All right.
But some disgusting person peed in a water bottle. That is revolting.
Producer Ben's saying, let's move on.
Yeah.
No, is he? Is he? Really?
Anyway, so I've been asked by a few followers who can confirm the so-called Borough fan who urinated in the QPR goalie bottle was arrested by colleagues. And, good. Let's hear now from a man who can't get enough wee, because he's French. It's Julien Laurent.
Hello, guys.
Hello there. Sunday? It was a big Sunday night of action all around Europe. You had Barcelona thrashing Real Betis, Messi on fire, 5-0, extending their lead at the top of the Liga to 11 points. Real Madrid had previously beaten Deportivo 7-1 with a little bit of innovation for Gareth Bale. In Italy, there was Inter against Roma, which wasn't entirely overwhelming, 1-1. But without doubt, the match of Sunday night took place in faraway Ligue 1, where Lyon, one of the teams chasing mighty Paris Saint-Germain, hosted Le Parisien at the Stade Lumière and beat them. Julien, what happened?
Oh, it was incredible, Jim. It was one of those games, one of the games of the season, without a doubt. Three amazing goals. The first one from Fekir inside the first 2 minutes. PSG, poor start of the game, a few mistakes. One of them being the position of their goalkeeper on a wide free kick from Fekir, who decided to shot straight at goal when we thought he would cross the ball into the box. And instead, he went in. And after that, Kurzawa scored a lovely left-foot volley on a cross by Dani Alves, so right back to left back to make it 1-1 just before halftime. And then with the last kick of the game, the late drama for Lyon, with Memphis Depay scoring an absolutely screamer with his right foot right in the top corner to make it 2-1 for Lyon. It was a great game with a lot of intensity, with a lot of tension. A big injury for Kylian Mbappe, for example, with a big clash with the Lyon goalkeeper. There was
he
no Neymar.
He got Schumachered.
Yes, he got Schumachered. Some said it should have been a pen. Others said that Lopez went for the ball, got the ball first, and then pretty much could have killed Kylian Mbappe. Mbappe is fine, he's okay, but just clattered into it.
No, he really did. It was like watching NFL or something. But so yeah, so it's PSG down a man because Dani Alves has been sent off with about half an hour to go. But 93rd minute, it's all 1-1, and Memphis Depay just picks up the ball, does a little bit of a run, just gets his bearings, and then unleashes that fabulous curling shot.
Yeah, and it's Levin Kurzawa, who, as you know, he's not my favourite player. I don't think he's good enough. I think he's a bit of a clown. Scored that amazing equaliser with that left foot volley just before halftime for PSG. No problem with that. But then in the last minute of the game, where you're down to 10, where it's 1-1 away to one of your big rivals in Lyon, he tries to do that pass, clever pass, in the middle of the pitch, loses the ball, he gets back to Fekir, then to Depay, and Depay scores. And it was a wonderful goal, but again, it was another mistakes from one of the PSG players, and I just don't think it should happen at that level. And you know, what I found very interesting but also very worrying for Paris was that once again, in a hostile atmosphere, away from home, against a team that is really up for it, with put a lot of intensity in, they lose. They can't psychologically compete with that kind of atmosphere. We saw it obviously at Barcelona last season, but even this year away in Munich in the Champions League, where it was a similar kind of thing, away at Marseille, where they were lucky to get a draw right at the end, but similar again, and even at Strasbourg, where the crowd was on fire and they really struggled to compete, even with Neymar that day, to compete with that kind of intensity.
So this game, Jules, was without Neymar, who picked up an injury, but not a terribly clear one. Is that right?
Yeah, exactly. He trained normally on Saturday. Everybody saw him training. And then the club said he had a thigh injury. There was a video that he put out where you could see him receiving treatment on his thigh. And somehow he was not in the squad and missed, like we said, you know, one of the biggest game of the season.
Right. How excellent has Memphis Depay been since joining Lyon?
He's been a bit hit and miss. Oh. He's had some amazing goals. Yeah, he was a sub, for example. He's a sub now for this team. He's not good enough to start, but he showed how what a great player he was with the goal at the last minute. Although he's been more difficult for him the last few months. He started well the season, and the last 2 to 3 months he's been on the bench. He was really the victim of the emerging talent of Oussam Aouar, who's the latest prodigy from the Lyon Academy, who's only 19, who plays instead of Memphis in the 4-2-3-1 or 4-3-3 formation.
What's
from
the
Lyon,
name,
and that's why Memphis on the bench.
What was the name again?
Oussam Aouar. Remember the name. Him and the other one from last night, just to finish quickly, Fekir had a good game because he scored that fantastic first goal. But Tanguy and Ndombele, who's the defensive midfielder at Lyon, who again is also 20, was just incredible. And I think you should remember the name, because soon he will come here to the Premier League and soon he will be with the French national team as well.
Ndombele. Okay. Jules, there's a new manager at Bordeaux, and it is?
Gus Poyet.
All right.
No one saw him coming. Michel Preud'homme, the the Belgium manager and the former Belgian international player as well, goalkeeper, was the big favorite, but apparently wanted too much money. And somehow, Bordeaux, you know, took out their hat, Gus Poyet, who was last seen in China, and he was sacked in September from Shanghai Shenhua, and he's back in Europe. I'm not sure. I mean, the people in Bordeaux were not that happy. A lot of skepticism about him. I'm happy to see what he can do in a team that has talent with players like Malcolm, if he stays, obviously. But also have lost all sort of confidence after the terrible run they've had since October, really.
OK. They had a win this weekend against Claudio Ranieri's Nantes. Was he in charge for that one, Poyet, or not?
No, he wasn't, yeah. There was a caretaker manager, Eric Bedouet, who's been at the club for a long, long time, who's the head of the academy. And Gus Poyet will take charge for next weekend's game now.
Super.
He speaks French because he used to play for Grenoble.
Ah,
back in the end of the 80s, we had a certain Yuri Djorkaeff in his team as well.
You're listening to The Totally Football Show with James Richardson.
I just wanted to pick up on Julien speaking about Memphis Depay, because
yes.
Another player who has
talking
been brought...
on Memphis.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Quite. Brought to Manchester United in the period between Sir Alex Ferguson and Jose Mourinho, not quite worked out and left. I remember covering his home debut at Old Trafford, which was a Champions League playoff. I think I'm right in saying it was his home debut against Club Bruges. And he scored two goals in the first half and was absolutely brilliant. Obviously wearing the number 7 shirt, which Alexis Sanchez will soon wear as well. And I remember speaking to quite a few people after the game who were sort of heralding this start that he made in the 7 shirt and linking it to the start that Cristiano Ronaldo made off the bench against Bolton a few years before. And I interviewed Memphis Depay after the match. And just before we did the interview, he was sat on the floor in the interview room looking quite despondent. And he was sort of we were waiting for our slot because the Champions League games, there are lots and lots of interviews going on, lots of different countries being represented by the broadcasters there. And I just remember saying to him something along the lines of, you've just scored two goals on your home debut, what's the problem? And he was absolutely despondent about the fact that he'd missed the chance not to score a hat-trick. He was completely and utterly transfixed with this moment. He's like, I could have had a hat-trick. And I was from my perspective, I was thinking, wow, home debut, two goals at Old Trafford for your new team. Amazing. And I remember coming away from that thinking, well, actually, if that's his attitude, this guy's going to be great. I wasn't right about that.
But do you think he could have been better?
Maybe.
I mean, was it his fault?
There's quite a number of footballers who've played for Manchester United in
and
this
Mourinho.
Period. Well, but it was before Mourinho where it went wrong, really, for him. And there's quite a lot of players in that period where you've sort of looked at them and it's not quite worked out for whatever reason. Manchester United have not been quite as good as before, which I'm sure has contributed. There has been changes in managers as well. And really just winning football matches for United until recently has not been as easy as it was before as well, which obviously means those type of players perhaps struggle more. It felt like there was, you know, the unfinished business when he left in a way, really. But if Julien's saying that he's not even getting in Lyon's team, then perhaps that is a true reflection of his ability, maybe.
Oh, yeah. Does seem that way, perhaps. By the way, on the subject of Italy, many thanks for all the kind feedback about our first episode of the dedicated Italian football podcast, Golazzo. Even Mikhail Silvestri retweeting it, which was a bit embarrassing because we've been a little bit snide.
What did you say about him?
No, we were talking about all the great players in the Inter squad in 1998, and Gabriele Marcotti said, yeah, Mikhail Silvestri, for a kind of comic effect. But we were discussing.
Do you think
5-4.
He retweeted it in a passive-aggressive way?
No, I think he's just a nice guy. He scored in the game we were discussing as well. And anyway, we're going to have an entirely more positive edition on Wednesday. We're not going to be rude about anyone, in case. In which we'll no doubt discuss Yusuf. You were asking about Milinkovic-Savic. How good can he become? That's a question we'll be asking in Wednesday's show. He had a brace and a brilliant volley this weekend in Lazio's 5-1 win over Chievo. That's two games in a row that Lazio have scored five goals in, because they won 5-2 away at Spal last weekend. All very exciting. That was third. We'll talk about all of that on Wednesday. Top four race. How's that looking now? What with Arsenal winning and etc. Well, Duncan, I know you know this. Man United, of course, are second on 53 points. Chelsea are third on 50. Liverpool currently rounding out the top four on 47. Spurs dropping 2 points behind them after that draw away at Southampton. And Arsenal moving 3 points behind their North London rivals. Of course, we wait for Liverpool to play this very evening. Be interesting to see how that goes. Spurs, they're 1-1 at Saints. You got any thoughts on that, Duncan? Is it very disappointing? Was it all about Eriksen not being part of the
side? Yeah, I think they massively missed Eriksen. Obviously, Kane's now up to 99 goals.
Mm.
Not red balloons.
All problems.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
99 problems, goal scoring ain't one.
There you go.
Jay-Z should have done that, really.
Yeah, thanks.
I've worked with you too many times, James. It's catching.
So, another own goal. Spurs kind of specialise in scoring own goals against Southampton.
Right?
Yeah, they do. Yeah, I think 0.5% of the goals Southampton obviously. I try and couch in a bit of mystery, but yeah, I definitely know. 0.5% of the goals Southampton have scored,
yes,
or not, as the case may be, in the Premier League, have been Spurs' own goals. So
that's a lot.
It does seem a lot, yeah.
Wow. I mean, obviously 0.5%.
It's a small number or a small percentage.
So it's 0.5%?
Yeah.
Of all the goals that they've scored have actually been contributed by Spurs?
Yeah, which is friendly, nothing else.
Wow. Indy Boonan's got a question. Is it still illegal to suggest that Dele Alli is actually quite average? He certainly was in this game, wasn't he?
I mean, he's not in good form, but if you look at how he's doing, he's played 93 games in Premier League, right. And he's got the 26th best ever record for goals and assists.
Really?
So, yeah. So at that stage of a player's career, 93 uh-huh. games, he's only four behind Kane was at that point.
Wow.
Obviously, Kane plays more up front, and he's only one. He's got one more than Eden Hazard did after 93.
So, does he miss playing alongside Eriksen?
Well, I think they all do. But
right.
The point is that just because Ali has had a sort of quieter month doesn't mean that his numbers aren't still really good.
Right,
this is his third Premier League season.
Yeah,
so perhaps it's just the first case of that third season syndrome that players don't often suffer, but that could be a new thing.
Thanks for that, Ian.
Yeah.
Kelly, you're nodding your head.
No, I just think he hasn't played particularly well this season. Certainly in the sort of latter stages of it, but I think it's a bit early to write him off as average because he hasn't had chance to recover from this dip. And if he does, then you judge him on the overall career.
That's fair
don't
enough.
You?
Yeah. Spurs themselves having a little bit of a dip. Here's Michael Prescott saying, given that Spurs are on course for at least 10 points fewer than last season, how do they progress and what do you see them doing over the next 18 months? Boy, that's a big question. Are they going to hang on to Harry Kane in the face of this £200 million offer that Real Madrid is supposedly now preparing?
I think so. He seems like a hand in a glove at Tottenham, doesn't he? You know, in terms of him coming through the ranks there and one of our own and all those sort of things. He doesn't seem to me like a character or player who would agitate for that type of move. Maybe it will happen at some point. I guess it depends on how Tottenham progress and how they get on with... We're finishing in top fours, qualifying for the Champions League, winning trophies and that sort of thing. But just at the moment, is this maybe where Tottenham should be?
Fifth?
Have they overachieved in recent years by punching higher and the success that Pochettino's had? Perhaps this is just a bit of a levelling year and they can push on from here. But the big concern for Tottenham for me is, like that story about Harry Kane, is when you've got the talent that they've got in their squad, it's how poachable these players could be if Spurs were to finish outside the Champions League. And if they were poachable, what sort of a rhythm that would then set for Tottenham's future?
Big questions. Burnley, that seat-clackingly good 1-0 win for Man United at Turf Moor. Ian, you were there and you talked to Jose Mourinho afterwards.
Yes. Yes, for me, it seems to be a theme, really, of people's opinion on Manchester United just lately, and comparing them to Manchester City, of course people will do that, given the position of the two teams geographically and in the league table at the moment. But I don't think there's any question that Jose Mourinho has improved Manchester United. I think they're certainly a better team to watch most of the time than they've been in recent years. And also as well, just in terms of the character of this team as well, the strength of character in this side, I don't believe that's a game that Manchester United would have won in past seasons at Burnley, in recent past seasons, because of the way that they've been. They'd look brittle at times, holding on to leads and that sort of thing. And there seems a real strength of character now in this squad, a happiness around the squad, a contentness in the squad as well, which I do think you have to give Jose Mourinho credit for as well. The question is now about how Alexis Sanchez fits into that.
Ah, well, that is the question, isn't it? And what that means for all their other talents.
Yeah, but I don't see it being an issue, to be honest. I don't think you can have too many good players. I don't think you can have too many players who are going to contribute in the way that Sanchez will, because I know for a fact Jose Mourinho believed that his squad lacked X factor at times.
Right.
It lacked a character stroke talent who was able to grab a tight match by the scruff of the neck, a la Anfield earlier on in this this season been that often quoted match.
Is Sanchez that player?
I think he believes he will be. Okay. And I think he has produced moments like that in matches throughout his career. And I think he's more able, shall we put it, than the players they've got in the squad currently to do that.
Fair enough. Are they excited about Alexis? Is there a buzz about it, Ian?
Yeah, definitely. Around Manchester there is as well. And I think Manchester United fans are really going to like him as a character as well. He's quite an intriguing guy. I was speaking to a colleague of mine over the weekend who works for South American television, Lou Restrepo, works for DirecTV. And he was saying that Alexis is into art galleries. Part of the reason why he likes living in London is he likes to go and look at art. He's an excellent pianist to a very, very good standard. He learnt by ear himself as well. I don't know if you saw his Instagram story over the weekend, getting on his private jet as well. He was playing...
Is that his jet?
I believe so, yeah, because we've seen it quite a few times, haven't we? Specifically with his dogs as well.
Yeah.
So he's best mates with two golden retrievers. Another part
That's
of
a
his...
Number.
Yeah, 99 problems, but a bitch ain't one.
Another part of his interesting sort of personal life.
Yeah.
And as well, he had the nickname...
The dogs are part of his personal life.
Well, they are.
Well, they are, aren't they?
Come on, Kelly, they are. They are his personal life, let's be frank.
Okay,
that's all he's got.
This particular story is part of his personal life.
Yeah.
He was nicknamed the squirrel when he was a kid.
Yes.
Because he loved climbing trees, and it's a hobby that he still partakes in now.
Ian, that is pod gold. He still climbs trees now.
I believe so,
If you're Man United, you're going to want to put a stop to that right now.
Well, so I'm told, but this is part of him as a free spirit and a character and all these sort of things.
None of this tallies with the Alexis Sanchez that we... But that's
fascinating,
what's so exciting
isn't it?
About the change. It's going to bring out a whole new aspect to him.
What's the nearest forest to Manchester?
I don't know.
He'd probably go into Cheshire, wouldn't he?
Yeah,
he'd
I was going
to
say,
or North Wales if you wanted to go quite extreme.
If I'm Alexis Cheshire, Sanchez, I'm going to make sure that I live in a big house with lots of big trees in the back garden, and I'll climb those.
Amazing.
When was the last time you climbed a tree, Kelly?
I mean,
it was a while now,
childhood.
Yeah. Really? Not since then?
But no, why? Why would I climb a tree?
Well, I don't know why, but
I would never have caused
human
Alexis Sanchez, apparently.
I'm not good with heights, which is probably part of it.
That would be an issue with climbing trees, especially big ones.
Duncan, you're a tree fan.
Yeah, I climbed a giant redwood.
Oh.
Not very high up, the giant redwood.
Are you allowed to do that?
It was in England.
Okay.
So, I don't know if that makes any difference.
Right.
But it was surprisingly smooth. I slipped a little bit.
You did?
Mm.
And what happened?
I just landed on my feet, so, Sanchez, I, can handle it.
Is this a thing, then?
Climbing trees?
Adults climbing trees?
Well, it was a kid involved.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, okay,
I was in
a
sort of semi-protective... capacity, but it...
Other than the slipping.
If you weren't
effectively rendered you useless
in the company of a young scamp, I don't know if you would naturally be moved to climb a tree. But there is something within the human spirit. You know, why climb a tree? Because it's there. That would be my answer. Because it's there. Anyway,
if you fall out of a tree...
I tell you what else is there...
And no one sees, does it make a noise?
You fall out of your tree. Not quite, Kelly, I'm afraid. Not without discussing West Ham's 1-1 draw with Bournemouth, featuring first goal since October for Hernandez. Alex Guildford says the 1 minute and 4 seconds between the goals at West Ham must be up there with the quickest in history for two opposing teams. The ball was in play for only 12 seconds. Duncan.
That is pretty quick. Sadly, we don't have the data for the whole Premier League. But my favourite example of something like this, not quite the same, was Wickham once scored with their last kick of the first half. And then scored directly from the kickoff in the second half. So they scored two goals without the opposition touching the ball, which is pretty rare.
That's amazing, isn't it? Very nice. And that's a great way to say you've heard about the football. Now let's get the odds with Ian McIntosh and Paddy Power.
Thanks, James. I'm here with Paddy Power, and it's movers and shakers, Paddy. How are you?
I'm wonderful, thanks. How are you getting on?
Yeah, surviving. Right, interesting one to start with. Watford threw another manager. I said at the start of the season I thought they'd get relegated and felt pretty silly for most of the opening exchanges. But now, form is so bad. Could that actually happen? Could I be right all along?
Well, their form might be bad, but luckily for Watford fans and unluckily for pessimistic predictors like yourself, form of other teams is equally as bad. So they've got Swansea and Huddersfield and West Brom and Brighton and Stoke and all sorts of teams down there with them. So Watford, they really have to continue to slide, and the new manager has to be a complete car crash, to be honest, for them to go down. I think they're 15-2 to be relegated, so 7.5-1, which means they're very, very likely to stay up. You might prove to be right in the end, but you're going to need a huge turnaround of form. There's a lot of things that have to happen for Watford to go down. A lot of that's to do with people like Huddersfield and West Brom and Brighton and clubs like that turning their form around and going on a bit of a run while Watford continue their slide. So I think it's unlikely they'll go down. So Watford fans, rest easy, because I'm never wrong about these things.
No. It always felt like I was clutching at straws. All right, what about this one for clutching at straws? Peter Crouch, not just to end up at Chelsea, but to end up top goal scorer at Chelsea. What do we get for that?
Yeah, this is... If Peter Crouch goes to Chelsea, first of all, that'll be eyebrow-raising. And if he goes there and gets loads of game time, that'll be more eyebrow-raising. If he goes there and gets loads of game time and becomes top scorer, but I tell you what, you can have 500-1 because it's just not going
to
happen.
500-1. This is something I really want to see happen. And also, it could kick off or re-kick off his international career. What could you get on Peter Crouch scoring for England at Russia?
Well, you know what? If he's top scorer at Chelsea, he's guaranteed to get picked for the England squad, isn't he? And he's guaranteed to get picked for England because he'd be obviously banging them in like Harry Kane. But he is 66-1 to score a goal for England at Russia at any stage. So if he goes in the squad, that's a great price, obviously. But the chances of him going, I think, are slim.
We called this Sergio Aguero getting the hat trick. We called it on Thursday, didn't we? What can we get on Sergio Aguero to get another perfect hat trick this season?
It's unlikely because it's hard to do, because even Aguero doesn't do it that often. But it's 10-1 that it happens again. I mean, he'd probably score another. I mean, it'd be a short price to score another hat trick this season, but to do the perfect one would be difficult. So 10-1, yeah, and Aguero to get another one.
Right, and finally, it's League Cup semi-finals. Bristol City to score the first goal against Manchester City and really, really put the frighteners on them. What can we get there?
Before Aguero goes out and scores a perfect hat-trick just next week, or in a couple of days, in 2 days' time. But Bristol City are 7-2 to score the first goal. Obviously, City are very short price favourite for that, but Bristol City have nothing to fear, so they'll go out and have a go, and 7-2 to score first. Why not?
You can find out these odds and more at paddypower.com. 18 plus only, of course. BeGambleAware.org, please. And when the fun stops, stop. Did you ever get the 11th man in that Pep Mourinho played for both managers 11?
I can't remember the 10 we got.
Could we have a clue?
Are you that bothered, Ian?
I was just trying to make it interesting for the people at home, really.
It's Maxwell.
Oh, that's a clue.
Yeah.
Maxwell. Yeah.
Yeah, Maxwell. Okay. There you go. Fabulous.
The fullback. Brazilian
fullback.
Yeah,
yeah. I mean, kind of attacking kind of wing back.
Not the former owner of Oxford United.
Not Robert Maxwell.
No.
Or
the guy who liked coffee as well. Maxwell House.
Ian? No. Nor was it him.
Or the singer.
Or anybody else. Soul singer Maxwell. Who have you got, Kelly?
That's who I went for.
Oh,
I just
sorry.
Said the singer really quietly.
Oh, Kelly,
I'm sorry.
You stole
it from me. It's all right. Don't worry about it.
So, this could go on for hours, listeners.
It couldn't.
But we're going to wrap it up there. Thank you so much for being with us, Kelly.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
Where will we next see you?
I'm off to Bristol tomorrow. Okay. Bristol City, Man City.
You're doing both of the semi-finals.
I know.
No, but that's...
It's a gift. And where are you next, James?
Well, I'll be here on... Oh, I'll be on Fan Zone around the world,
yes,
on the Premier League's thing. That's on
Tuesday.
I do
very much enjoy that.
Yep, always.
And good fantasy football?
Fantasy on Thursday, a little bit Golazzo. Oh, you don't want to hear about me.
I do.
No.
Come on, James,
Ian,
I really do.
What are you doing next, Ian?
Fan Zone today.
Oh, you're doing Fan Zone today?
Yeah, later
you
on, yeah.
Go after that.
And reaction after the match later as well. Liverpool.
Yeah. Right. Oh, good, okay. And Duncan?
I'm not allowed out, so I'm going back in.
You going back in?
Inside the numbers.
All right, then. Boom. Thank you so much for this little sortie into the non-empirical world.
It's confusing, but enticing.
The analogue existence. Yeah. Nice. All right, listeners, thank you so much for being with us. We'll be back on Thursday. Football League tomorrow, Golazzo on Wednesday. Make Totally part of your week, and we'll catch up with you soon.
The Totally Football Show is a Muddy Knees Media production. For sales and advertising, email sales@muddyneesmedia.com.